Welcome to We Speak, a podcast by the We Lead program. We Lead is an innovative and far-reaching program that aims to strengthen the influence and position of young women whose sexual and reproductive health and rights, SRHR, are neglected the most. The program targets young women and adolescent girls who live with HIV, face vulnerability and discrimination, live with disability, and are affected by displacement. And my name is Aya. I'm your presenter of the pioneer episode of We Speak. Karibu, bienvenue, bienvenidas, bienvenido, and welcome. This episode focuses on the principle of local ownership, which lies at the core of the We Lead program. This nuanced look at engagement is being championed in all 9 implementing countries. Tambudzai Madzimure from Hivo, South Africa, starts to lay down the basics of local ownership.
Building genuine and mutually beneficial relationships. So I think in the work we do, it really is not just about giving a grant and then walking away. It has to be really genuine and mutually beneficial. So the one that has the resources and the one on the other side with the problem, they find each other to work together. So this is actually done with local partners who are implementing at the local level. I think that's actually the most important part of local ownership. It has to be local. It can't be something that is actually being kind of have a helicopter view where it's being implemented from elsewhere into something else. Local ownership is also about ethics. And with the ethics, we're looking and saying nothing for us without us. So as a community, if I have a problem, I want to be involved in finding a solution towards that problem. It also is about strategy, and the strategy is recognizing that those close to the problem actually do know how to actually address the problem if they have the right conditions in place. Local ownership is also about real partnership, understanding that each partner has a role to play. In the work that we do, a lot of it is around exchange in resources for work to be done. But it's understanding that, yes, as Tambudzai working and sitting in Hivos, I actually do not have power over whatever it is that is happening or the area where there is a problem. They also have got a lot more that they're bringing to the table. It's recognizing that local communities need to be responsible for their own development. And for me, I think also it's about movement building. For it to work, you need to have consensus, you need to have coordination, and there needs to be recognition that there is strength in numbers.
So, no more helicopter style of implementation. And I love the phrase Tambudzai uses that should be remembered when it comes to local ownership. Nothing for us, without us. However, every coin has two sides. Tambudzai elaborates on the limitations encountered.
There's a heavy reliance on external resources, which sometimes leads to compromises when people are actually making decisions. This might be because of the reporting requirements that are there. So if we're then looking at kind of the funding arrangements that we have here, there are reporting requirements which might not suit a specific community, but because it is a requirement that is coming tied to the resources, the financial resources I'm getting, I have to actually make sure that I actually also comply. There is also the structuring of responses to suit the funding available. Sometimes there is a compromise there where communities would prefer to do some things in a certain way, but they don't really get to do it 100% in the way they wanted and compromise to be able to match. And then time is also a challenge. Sometimes some solutions need more time, but because the funding cycles have a time limitations, you are then expected to speed up in terms of how you do things to match the time that you've been allocated. And then it relies on all partners having a common understanding and appreciation of the bigger picture. It really should be something that is built on trust, on an exchange that really then brings kind of common solutions.
Words of the wise. Thank you, Tambudzai. The comments and insights you will be hearing on this podcast were part of a webinar hosted in August 2023, where the partners who constitute the We Lead program discussed the principles of local ownership. The first three objectives of the webinar were to explore the context of local ownership within the We Lead program, to learn what it means to put rights holders in the driver's seat, and to establish ways in which host organization engagement can be strengthened as an enabler of local ownership. Implementing this program has involved immense learning for all involved, and one aspect of that has been localizing the theory of change. For Ligia de Steven, from the Community of Action, COA, in Honduras, this was her first experience localizing a theory of change, and she shared how they undertook this process.
The first step will always be to analyze the context in which we find ourselves in. We have to conduct an analysis from the experience, knowledge, and what is happening in order to find the challenges and what we need in order to face these challenges. It is also very important to identify key stakeholders of context, the promoters of the context, and also those who are against, meaning to stakeholders that are allied and those that are against what we want to achieve. Normally and unfortunately, we find more that are against, especially those that are in position of power, but there are also stakeholders that are an important part, maybe not in decision making, but influencing, like the media and others around us. Well, we have been able to see what can be done and what is feasible for us here locally, and especially what are the foundation on which we will start. Because maybe we will start in a society or context that is a little bit ahead in some topics or rights, but maybe we need to start from the basics. So based on that, we can make strategies towards that objective or outcome. It has also been very important to at least try to analyze the capacities that the organizations involved have and how far they can get and how we can those groups' capacities and experience to contribute to the theory of change. In this experience, we also established these roadmaps to know what I needed to do to get to an objective, and then the specific actions. Sometimes it may happen that we make a contextualization of the theory of change and we have activities, but it's also necessary to constantly revise this, reading over and over, and not only focusing on this specific action, because at the end of the day, these large or small actions contribute to the theory of change.
Besides being a COA facilitator, Ligia is a psychologist, feminist, and SRH rights defender, as well as the creator of the podcast Volvamos a Empezar, all about sexuality. Gracias, Ligia. We now move to Nigeria, where the COA brought four organizations together to help generate the localized version of the theory of change, resulting in their learnings as highlighted. Fisayo Owoyemi is a former COA facilitator and queer feminist.
We have locally adapted our TOC, to resonate our local context. For instance, the situation of, rights holders in Nigeria is different from the issues that they experience in Kenya. Is it different from the issues that they experience in Mozambique? Some of it might be similar, but ultimately there is a need for his to be, contextualized to, the environment in which we work in. And that has, helped us in shaping what are like the specific needs of the rights holders within the context in which we work in? What are their needs? What are the aspirations of the community? So this way, the rights holders can relate more easily and see how that aligns to whatever priorities that they are looking at.
This process also highlighted the need to be culturally aware and the significance of minding one's language. Fisayo Owoyemi again.
You know, we live in different contexts. The context of Niger is completely different from the context of Nigeria, even though we are like neighbors. But there are some certain things in terms of language, in terms of how you relate some certain things. For instance, in the northern Nigeria, you can't talk about family planning. If you talk about family planning, then, you know, your conversation is already out of the door before you even reach where you're going. So localizing it and, you know, local ownership has, you know, in the conversation that we've had with the rights holders, in conversations that we've had with the local stakeholders, it made us understand that there's a need maybe to tweak the kind of language in which we use to communicate, you know, the changes in which we are trying to create.
Lorna Nyandat is from a Kenyan-based, community-based organization. She is the executive director of the Nyimine Empowerment CBO, which is part of the Kenyan COA. She ushered us into the East African region and shared her insights from the Kenyan experience of the localization process.
We've been able to specifically look at, for example, advocating for sexual reproductive health for women of concern. It requires a different approach than advocating for sexual reproductive health for young women with disability. That is based on our country's context. So this has provided more insight to us, even as a Kenyan COA, to be able to develop different strategies for different right holder groups. And this has enabled us yield different outcomes as well.
Consultations were the order of the day in this process of localization, be it in Guatemala, Lebanon, Niger, or Kenya. And the COAs learned that each environment had its contextual challenges, but also offered welcome opportunities for the rights holders, as indicated by Lorna.
We have yielded a buy-in from the different stakeholders and also from the rights holders themselves, because we have scenarios where our rights holders, there is the zeal and there is the ownership of the project from the right holder angle. The other month we had the annual Reproductive Health Network conference in our country, and we were able to have rights holders attend the conference and be part of the speakers in the conference. And these are rights holders who 3-4 years ago were not in a position to, you know, be able to speak to people, a large amount of people, and talk about sexual reproductive health and actually talk about, for example, their HIV status and everything. So we, through this project and the empowerment that the project has been able to bring to us, we've been able to empower our different right holder groups and different right holders to be able to advocate and voice out their concerns when it comes to sexual reproductive health.
Localizing the TOC guaranteed community buy-in and ownership at the grassroots level, potentially increasing the chances of sustainable and impactful change within the respective communities. You're listening to the We Speak podcast from the We Lead program supported by Hivos. I'm your host, Aya. In this inaugural episode, we examine the concept of local ownership, which is a key driver of the program. Before continuing the episode, here's a brief overview of the We Lead program. The program puts young women as rights holders in the driver's seat while supporting them in making sustainable changes for their SRHR. And it is being implemented in the following countries: Guatemala, Honduras, Jordan, Kenya, Lebanon, Mozambique, Niger, Nigeria, and Uganda. You'll notice that we did our best to ensure that the various voices and insights from the different regions are represented on this podcast. So far, we've broadened our understanding of local ownership and learned how the program's TOCs were localized. In this segment, we shall listen to host organizations share their insights into how participatory grant making was factored into this process. Charles Owekmeno is an SRHR advocate, the country director of SRHR Alliance Uganda, and the interim regional coordinator of the African Network of SRHR Alliances. Charles pointed out key elements that have helped strengthen local ownership of the program in Uganda.
The first is making sure that there is local leadership. And that is one of the things that the Alliance has provided for the program, that there is a local leadership that is a reference point that is able to organize and coordinate the key actors in the program at the local level, and linking them with the regional and the global team. The second element is capacity. For us to see that there's a meaningful localization, the program must invest in ensuring that there's a local capacity to manage the program. The Alliance already had experience, but in some instances, you find there's limited capacity to make sure that the program is grounded at the local level, that there are structures at the local level that can make the program meaningfully function. And that's one of the things that the Alliance has done. And also it goes with the capacity of the partners involved. Because for the partners to effectively participate in the program and contribute to the program, we must make sure that there's some core element of capacity that they have. And that is one of the areas that the Alliance has been working a lot on, making sure that the cores have systems, have functional structures, but also have technical capacity to deliver the program. Because when they are coming in the space of the program, what do they bring on board? What capacity do they have? Because that level of empowerment is what enables them to become more accountable on the program, make contributions, ask questions, meaningfully contribute to the decisions that are being taken at the country level. And that's really key. The other element is that there is a mechanism at the country level for the program to function, that there's mechanism and spaces for meetings and conversations to review the program progress, to discuss emerging issues on the program, and this space and mechanism is meaningfully involving all the key cores and partners and stakeholders involved in the program. And that is one of the things that the Alliance is doing at the country level in Uganda. We're making sure that we're having regular reviews, and we're not just involving program teams or the cores, but we're also involving the finance team. And so everyone is being involved in the conversation around how the program should function at a country level.
We are in the Middle East now, specifically Jordan, where we meet Fotu Yunus. Fotu is the executive director of the Arab Network for Civic Education. She starts by sharing a novel approach they have adopted to ensure the right synergies are present to enable the work to take place.
This wellness component, and we use that in a good way, where we have the host organization staff and community of action staff to be in the same room and same experience, where they discuss their self-care, their self-well-being, and their individual reflections throughout their journey in the We Lead.
Kudos to this holistic approach to working. It has reaped impressive results, raising the Alliance's profile within Jordan and beyond its borders.
We engaged with the community of action members in a policy change effort And together we submit the stakeholder report on SRHR to the Human Rights Council of United Nations, the Universal Periodic Review, the UPR. And it was a process together where we plan, contextualize the problems of SRHR in Jordan. We write together the report after a linking and learning national conference where we have all stakeholders in Jordan, including the governmental organizations and the Ministry of Health, in the same learning event. And we came up with a draft, and then we developed the draft to become a solid report, and we submit that in the to the Human Rights Council of the United Nations to be as a stakeholder report of the UPR. So this effort gave the community of action a leadership at policy level. They were really recognized at national level also, and they give them this ownership and sense of belonging, because their own recommendations from the ground came up at international level.
Fotu also laid down a challenge to the other counterparts in their respective COAs.
While we are encouraging local ownership, also we should encourage the community of action members to go out of their comfort zone and try to improve and widen their scope of work. We should support them to enable them to take up new challenges and escalate their work gradually, to come up with increased work and efforts on SRHR.
Shukran for the challenge, Fotu. The Organization of Economic Development states that locally owned country development strategies and targets should emerge from an open and collaborative dialogue, where local authorities with civil society and external partners talk about their shared objectives and contributions to the joint enterprise. Basically, local ownership is about local actors taking the reins and assuming responsibility for their development, while external partners are mere supporters. This premise is echoed by all the parties involved with We Lead and is extended to the process of grant-making, which takes on a participatory approach. Once again, all hands are on deck. Daniela Flores is an activist who uses feminism as a tool for political organizing. She is also the program coordinator for the Fondo Centroamericano de Mujeres, or Central America Women's Fund, and a founder of Las Vanders and the Economic Justice Network. She highlights the steps they undertook in this process.
Uno, definir las agendas, prioridades, estrategias en sus propuestas.
First, define the agendas, priorities, and strategies of their proposals. Therefore, in the implementation, they can make the changes they consider necessary. Second, this is an anonymous process. Organizations only have information on the initiatives, and this allows participants to have the same opportunities to be selected in an inclusive, democratic, and transparent process. Third, we are convinced that this model also contributes to change the relationship that the movements have with money, because organizations cannot vote for their own and do not know the identities of those they are voting for, allowing them to truly focus on the initiatives they consider should be more urgently implemented. Fourth, organizations selected in this process know that they were selected by their peers, and this contributes to their commitment and sense of belonging within the movements. Fifth, additionally, they can learn what they want to do, identify possible partnerships and points of learning to improve their own strategies. Organizations can provide and receive feedback from their peers. FCAM's institutional commitment to transform relationships of power from our role of donor does not end with the creation of a participatory selection methodology. FCAM understands that shifting the power and participatory processes must be part of a complete system, including accompaniment, a capacity strengthening, building relationships of trust, open communication, and a PMEA system that includes learning and strengthening. And all these elements must include the voices and perspectives of the core part organizations.
Y que todos estos elementos deben de contemplar las voces y perspectivas de las organizaciones copartes.
While in Kenya, the grant-making process raised individual and organizational capacities, enhanced partnerships, and a greater sense of solidarity, as was reported by Lillian Matemu.
The participatory grant-making actually supported in ensuring that the resource allocation and the grant allocation was actually reflective of the localized TOC. So that already gave an opportunity to ensure that the TOC is actually, you know, coming to life, even in terms of how the allocations of the budget and resources are being done. And this is being spearheaded and also in participation with the rights holders and also the different layers and coordination platforms within the program, the host organization here, and also the consortium partners.
Lillian also went on to share a key learning from this process.
One of the things to mention is that participatory grant making takes time, and it requires proper planning and advanced planning. So that was a key learning for us, because it may have caused a bit of delays within the first onset. So even as we go into subsequent years, and this has to be replicated, we have to do proper planning, advanced planning, doing our reflections way in advance, ensuring that the reflections actually align with the priorities we want for the subsequent year, and actually ensuring that the calls, if proposals are being done and everything are done in way in advance, the committees are set up way in advance and all of that, so that when we don't have any delays as well.
The We Lead Consortium consists of 6 civil society organizations: Positive Vibes, Restless Development, MARSA, FEMNET, the Central America Women's Fund, and HIVOS. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Netherlands is also part of the association. HIVOS is the leader of the consortium and is responsible for the development of the processes of implementation. Another critical aspect of the program is research. Dr. Margriet van Vessel is an associate professor in the Strategic Communication Chair Group at the Wageningen University and Research in the Netherlands, and she explains what the commissioned research on local ownership wants to achieve.
Can COAS be part of the local ownership solution that so many organizations are seeking for? And if so, how? And I think this is a really interesting question that HIVOS would like to address, because there is so much discussion of local ownership and there's so much talk of principles and dreams and aims, but what works and what doesn't work? How can things move forward? And if so, how? And so the goal is really to come up with actionable, evidence-based results to support and develop further the COAS.
Meanwhile, Restless Development had undertaken a learning study on local ownership, and its research and learning manager, Dennis Mwasigwa, presented its findings.
One of the major learnings that came out was inbuilt flexibility to adapt to local contexts and enable some of the COAs to put in place implementation adjustments that are beneficial to the groups. For instance, in Lebanon, sub-granting in cash because banks are not allowing them to withdraw their money. And not only that, also when it comes to capacity building, the COAS has adapted different local training formats. For example, not following the traditional format of training full day. So they were able to train in formats of like coaching sessions with fewer people, very much tailored to what the person or the organization is already doing. And then also just looking at example was Jordan also, where they literally had to adapt to a way of working, a different way of working, given that it is illegal to work with LGBTQI and community. So the COAS approach had to be also adopted. At consortium level, the rights holders felt that it would be important that we actually considered other marginalized women. For example, in Niger, fistulas and infertile women are really very much discriminated against, and they are rejected by family and society. So they have very much limited access to SRHR services. Also, something that was considered very important, something that could be considered in the future, is considering including livelihood component in the program. This came out very much in Central America, where some rights holders actually cited livelihood struggles as a barrier to participate within in the program in WILAID. Also considering at consortium level was considering encouraging collaborating more with other local human rights organizations, which would be very much a favorable space to know like other spaces, what is actually happening in other spaces as well. And then at COAL level, the rights holders felt that it was good to amp up advocacy and awareness raising around the issues affecting women, especially living with HIV. This came out mostly strongly in Mozambique. And then also focus on the issue of child marriage and engage more with sex workers among us, displaced girls and women. And this came out mostly in the Middle East. So, and also leveraging on the opportunity afforded by the post-electoral context, like in Nigeria, which is ripe for lobbying law and policymakers and campaigning on women's rights.
As we end this podcast, I hope you've gotten a concise snapshot of local ownership's significance in the WILAID program. For more details on the program, please visit hivos.org. We Speak was created and edited by Kevin Washiro of Finger Piano Productions, and Manasseh Solomon produced its sound. We appreciate all who've made this conversation possible, all parties involved in the WILAID program, and more so, the rights holders. Thank you for listening.